on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Everybody, wherever you may be, welcome along to another edition of the Orient Hour. Plenty to talk about tonight. Well, good evening, everybody. I hope you're well, wherever you may be. Welcome along to another edition of The Orient Hour. And I'm joined temporarily at the moment by just one in the studio. That's Darren Burrows. How are you, Darren?
I'm good, Andy. You well?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. The weather's dull, but we're here. So let's crack on, shall we? And we've had a signing. That's the new news tonight. A right back has been signed by Leighton Orient, Jordan Thomas, 19 years old, signed for a year's loan from Norwich City. And Darren, you know the family.
I do, yeah. I know his dad, Cliff. I've known him about 25 years. A really nice family, really good people. He'll be from good stock, that's for sure. His brother was a player for Bristol Rovers. Unfortunately, due to injury, only made one appearance. So it's in the blood. The dad was good. I've got to say that, Cliff, haven't I? I'm delighted to see him sign for the Orient on a personal note. So look forward to his debut.
Well, looking at what he's saying about himself is that he likes to get forward. Now, that would fit in with a sort of wing-back role if Ross is going with a 4-3-3, which we think he favours. That would fit in well with that. But also, if you go 4-4-2 with just a standard full-back. But he looks like he's got options. He played against us, didn't he, Darren?
He did, yeah. It was against... he played for Norwich against us. I think we won 1-0, Andy, from memory. We certainly won the game. And he looked composed. He looked one of the better players, I thought, from Norwich. Possibly slightly biased, knowing his father as well as I do. So, but no, he certainly... I think the wing-back these days, Andy, I think that's the mould, isn't it? The young lads coming through tend to be of that mould. Yeah. And he's got pace, so yeah.
Well, he's look forward to seeing him play. Now, the club's asked us to just let you know about the streaming, of course, for this weekend, which is the big thing, the kick-off this weekend with the cup tie at Forest Green. Now, the match-by-match streaming cards are available. It's a temporary measure that's only been put in place while clubs operate at a zero or reduced capacity as a result of the pandemic, and will be subject to regular review by the EFL and broadcasting partners, with the first set for early October. The club will be doing everything possible to extend the service when crowds are able to return and will keep fans updated regularly over the coming weeks. As per EFL regulations, season card holders can pay to access away 2021 Sky Bet League 2 fixtures as well as the Carabao Cup and the EFL Trophy fixtures. Please note we have paused season card sales while we identify capacity potential. We want to reassure fans who have applied for a 2021 season card that they will have their booking honoured. We will advise as soon as possible whether we will be able to take any more season card applications for the 2021 season, which will include access to Orient live streams of home league games that are played behind closed doors or with a reduced capacity that restricts your attendance. Now, for now, 2021 O's Skybet League 2 matches are being streamed exclusively live on Orient TV for UK and overseas fans. Match passes for Orient TV UK is £10. International video match passes £7. The audio match pass £2.50 and the audio monthly pass £4.49. They'll update you overseas fans as soon as the international video season packages are confirmed by the EFL. Fans based in the UK will not be able to purchase video season packages. Now, all non-televised 2021 Carabao Cup fixtures will also be streamed live on Orient TV. We're away to Forest Green, as you know, this Saturday. Orient TV UK video match passes are £10. You can apply to the club for those. Just go online. Round one, Orient TV international video match passes are not available to international viewers. Round one, audio match passes are available for £2.50. Okay, so to get your pass for our first round clash with Forest Green Rovers, simply contact the club and they'll sort you out with one. We'll be able to update fans as soon as the EFL Trophy pass prices are confirmed. Orient are set to take on Brighton under-23s, Charlton Athletic and AFC Wimbledon in the group stages. So get in touch with the club before Saturday, I suggest, and get yourself sorted out to listen to Dulcet Dave on the commentary, and that's if you're on the audio, or commentary with pictures if you buy the video pass. Now, talking of Dulcet Dave, he's been doing a bit of interviewing for us, Darren.
He has, yeah. I think I'm quite looking forward to this one, Andy, and certainly Joby's somebody comes across really well, so it should be a really good interview. Yeah,
yeah. Well, I mean, last time we got him to do an interview for us, he was on a farm, and this time he's ended up at the Blackwall Tunnel, although sometimes it sounds like he's in it. But here he is talking with Joby McAnuff yesterday, Dave Victor and Joby McAnuff. Should be.
It's glad it's done now, to be perfectly honest. Obviously, from our point of view, it's been good to get in a bit earlier and get a bit of a head start. But yeah, I think if you ask most footballers, they're quite happy when that last pre-season game's finished and, you know, looking at the proper stuff starting, obviously, on Saturday.
And for you, it's an astonishing career, which I think started at Wimbledon back in, was it 2001? Debut against Norwich City, I understand.
Yeah, it's taken me back a long time now. I've got to wrap the brains to and the memory banks to remember that far back. But yeah, it's been a little while now, and again, it's, you know, something that you always remember fondly in terms of starting out, where you started. You know, the club that was you know, a special place to be, coming through the youth ranks and through the reserves and getting into the first team and getting that opportunity to do, you know, what I always wanted to do. And you know, we had some really, really good times there. So yeah, a lot of past since, but you know, certainly from my point of view, they were, you know, really, really important stages, you know, my career.
But all those seasons, I can't imagine that you've ever experienced anything like the preparation for the forthcoming season and the way in which the last campaign finished.
Yeah, they've been, you know, very, very strange times, I think, for us in football and I think for everyone around the world, to be honest, Dave. I think, you know, nothing's gone as it would normally have been to plan. It's been a really a matter of just trying to adapt and, you know, get on with things as best we can, whether that be when we first heard, obviously, the news of the season ending, you know, what we did during that off-season period, once it all got confirmed that, you know, the season wouldn't be completed. And then, of course, the build-up and the preparation in terms of coming back in, where, again, you know, I have to go on record and say the board, you know, Nigel and Ken have been absolutely magnificent, as everyone else at the football club has, in terms of enabling us to get in you know, in the circumstances, a little bit earlier than a lot of other clubs have been able to get in, especially, you know, with the expense incurred in terms of the testing, you know, and obviously taking us off furlough. So it's something that, from a player's point of view, we're very, very appreciative of, and we feel like, despite everything that's gone on, we do feel like we're in a good place, and we've got a little bit of a head start over maybe some of our rivals. So we're in a really, really positive mindset at the moment, and really looking forward to the season, you know, despite everything that has gone on.
I mean, the club has been astonishing, haven't they, since lockdown? They've been so positive, so many initiatives. But in terms of the lockdown, in terms of the way in which the last season finished, for you personally, it must have been so frustrating, because you've only just come back.
Yeah, it was, you know, the worst possible time in that respect. You know, I worked very, very hard to get back to, you know, getting myself anywhere near the first team after a few setbacks injury-wise. It was a real tough year. On a personal level, you know, off the pitch, you know, I've never had one that I've missed as much football as that, and to have it at the age I am is probably compounds it, really. So, you know, once we got to the bottom of the actual injury and I had the procedure that, for me, really sorted everything out in November, it was just a matter of rehabbing and trying my hardest to get back. There was no guarantees from the surgeon that I would be able to get back fully fit and playing professionally. It was really a matter of trying to resolve the issues that were giving me pain, and, you know, really for a longer term viewpoint, really, and life in general. You know, I've got two young kids, and it was a difficult time, you know. So that was really the first port of call, and even getting back in itself was going to be a challenge, but I managed to get back. And, you know, kind of, we always had ourselves a target of, you know, get back to sort of March, which would give me sort of 10 games or so, just to, you know, see where I was at and really have a good crack at the end of the season to, again, let us know where we were further down the line. So, yeah, listen, it's one of those things that it was frustrating, but in the grand scheme of things and everything that was going on, you know, for me, I got back, which was the main thing. You know, I got to get back on the pitch. You know, my kids were there, and, you know, it was a really nice day. You know, we obviously won the game. I got a fantastic reception. And I'll be honest, if that was going to be it for me, you know, as much as I would have liked to have had a better season, the fact I got back was a milestone in itself. And from then on, you know, once I kind of had the discussions with the club, and then they made it clear they were happy for me to continue, and it's certainly what I wanted to do, it was just about maintaining that fitness, you know, having worked so hard to get there, not to let it all go to pot, you know, during lockdown. So I worked really hard. You know, I was out pretty much every day and keeping myself ticking over, and, you know, couldn't wait to get back in. So, yeah, I'm in a good place. I mean, injury-wise, is great. I feel good, strong. And then obviously the fitness side of things and then playing games will obviously improve, you know, as the season goes on.
Next season's going to be so different for so many reasons. Let's start with the fact that there's going to be so many games congested, so many midweek games. I think 11 in the league, assuming that there's not any postponements, they've got all the other cup commitments and such like. Games coming thick and fast. The squad has to be managed, I suppose, by Ross Embleton. But what about yourself, Joby? I don't really be rude, but, you know, you'll be in your 39th year.
Yes, well, that's clearly something. Again, before anything was signed, you know, I'm, again, very, very fortunate here that we have incredible communication between all departments. You know, that comes right from the top, you know, all the way down, but particularly obviously with Ross and Martin Ling, you know, two people I know very well and get on very well with, and ultimately they make the football decision. So, you know, we had a good, honest, open discussion, and, you know, I've got to be sensible in that respect. I'm, you know, not sitting here expecting to start 46 games next year plus all the league games. That would be unrealistic. I think that's going to be tough for anybody, Dave. I've got to be honest, with the congestion fixtures that you've spoken about and, you know, real tough schedule this year, squad is going to be massive. That's something we really tried to reiterate to the boys. I think from that point of view, again, we're in a good place, you know, with what the club's done in terms of, one, making sure that a lot of the lads were secure anyway, but two, maybe getting the two or three that we really wanted to get done, you know, and keep that squad together, has been massive for us. And, you know, we're in a really healthy position from a squad point of view. We're trying to, again, really get that across to the lads that even if you might not be starting the first game, You know, there's going to be changes, whether it be congestion to the fixture list, whether it be injuries, the usual sort of stuff. So I think that is actually something that's going to really, we feel, help us maybe, you know, a lot more than some of the other teams that are going back and starting from scratch, smaller squads, you know, maybe a huge turnover of players that you're seeing at quite a lot of clubs at our level. And again, that is certainly something that on a personal level is something I'm going to have to be very, very wary of. But also from the squad point of view, we really feel with a bit of rotation and that communication that, you know, it would actually be something that could actually help us.
Realistically, what could be a target for next season for the owners?
Well, I'm always one for pushing on and aiming as high as you can. I don't see anything wrong with that. I know some people may not want to, you might call it false hope or, you know, raise expectations. But for me, you know, I certainly want to be at the very, very least, and something we're drumming into certainly the boys is, you know, to very, very, very first thing is, of course, to improve on last year. You know, for me, top half of the table puts you in with a shout of the playoffs. You only have to look at the positioning of the teams that finish in, you know, 9th, 10th, 11th, and particularly in our league with the 7 teams that go in, you're not going to be far off. So again, that should really be our aim, I think. You know, real strong season, you know, predominantly in the top half of the table, and then from then on, if you can get a good start and put yourself in a good position, you know, early on, that gives you a really good chance of attacking it. But again, even if you're there or thereabouts, you know, when the real action sort of starts, sort of March kind of time, then you're always in with a shout of potentially getting into those playoff places. I certainly feel we've got the squad to do it. You know, I think you look at the form, you know, as again, you touched on, you know, it was very frustrating as a club because we finally seemed to find a way of playing that suited everybody. You know, we were putting
especially at home.
Yeah, putting together some really good performances as well as results and consistently, which we hadn't managed to do up until that point. And when you look at that probably last 9 games or so, you know, that was very much playoff form. So, you know, it's very much a similar squad this year. You know, you take away the clubs that went up, who, in my opinion, you know, were very, very good teams, you know, Swindon and Plymouth, Crewe, you know, take them out of the equation. You know, for me, we've really got to be targeting that top half of the table. And, you know, we're confident. Again, for me, we don't want to settle. We don't want to just have an average sort of mid-table-y kind of season. You know, we felt that last year with everything that went on, you know, prior to the season starting, it was difficult. It was a real tough year at times. A lot of people adjusting to a new level, us as a club, you know, re-establishing ourselves as a League Two club. You know, again, we've had that base now, and now it's really time to kick on, especially given the platform that, you know, everyone at this football club's given us as players.
And for you personally, you're focusing on playing rather than coaching. But I, you know, watching you in those pre-seasons, particularly the drink breaks and such like, you still seem to be very involved with coaching and sort of supporting others.
Yeah, listen, I think something that is very important to me, I think, whether you are a coach, whether you are a captain, you know, certainly as a senior player, you know, you have a duty. I've always been very fortunate in my career to have really good senior pros around me. I think it's something that probably is getting less and less around certain teams. One, from a financial point of view, you know, maybe clubs don't see a value in a 30-something-year-old player. But for me, that, again, whether you call it coaching from the side, you know, whether you call it, you know, just managing little situations, maybe in a changing room, maybe out on a training ground, or, you know, at a match. They're all things that, you know, I feel I certainly really enjoy doing. And again, the more that we've got of those, you know, the stronger the place is going to be. And, you know, we're very fortunate to have a very, very good coaching set up now, particularly with Danny coming in to really strengthen that group. Obviously, addition of Matty Harold on that side and Brillo, you know, to really go in and help Ross. And from that point of view, I'll just try and back that up as best I can. Of course, I want to play. I want to be on the pitch a lot more than I was last year. But again, I've got the opportunity, you know, and I'm very grateful for it, that I can dip in and out of the coaching side of things and really you know, have one foot in one camp and one foot in the football camp, really, and the playing side of things, and still learn, you know, it's still an area of the game that I want to learn, I want to improve, and, you know, I'm in a really good place to be able to do that.
And you're so unusual, Joby, these days, you know, players that have played at the top level, international level, it's so unusual to see them make the decision to carry on playing, to enjoy playing, but to play, you know, in football's fourth tier. Looking back on your career, Joby, are there sort of players who are maybe in their 30 pluses that would stand out as a role model for you?
Yeah, there's been loads, I've got to be honest. I think really for me, the big, big eye-opener. I mean, we had some really good senior pros at Wimbledon, which again, you know, everything that I've gone on to do has come from that grounding, you know, that base, that school of learning that I was in, which was tough, but a fantastic one. And you only have to look at some of the guys that have come out of that. I mean, Gareth Ainsworth, just talking about my position in particular, Neil Ardley were two, you know, that were senior pros, but they were so good with me as a young lad and in their position, who was trying to come and take their position, you know. But there was never a day where if I was chosen to play in front of them, they weren't giving me that little bit of advice or, you know, working on my game in training. You know, it set such a good example to me. And again, that's just two players. I mean, the whole squad was full of them. You know, I could literally name every single player in that era, and they were fantastic. And then I moved to West Ham, and Teddy Sheringham came in just before I left. And at that point, he was, you know, way, way into his 30s, late 30s at that point. I can't remember exactly how old he was. But just seeing him in the condition he was physically, again, you know, in the Championship, but a player that has predominantly played at the highest of levels, you know, internationally, Champions League. And his attitude, his determination to keep himself fit and be a positive influence around the lad just really rubbed off on the rest of the group. So, you know, I'd say, you know, from an early age, I was very fortunate to see, you know, players like that, and it really, again, you know, instilled something in me to want to be able to go and do that, hopefully. And you know, listen, playing football is the best job in the world. You know, I think anyone who's played will tell you that. And for me, it's about going out and, of course, enjoying the day today, but it's all about Saturday, Tuesday, kind of trying to win, you know, 3 points for your team. And whether that's in the Premier League or, you know, the National League or League Two, it's all the same for me. And, you know, while I've got that desire and the body's holding up, then, you know, I'll obviously go as long as I can, because it's something I really love and enjoy doing.
Do you think it's a shame that players aren't following sort of your example and continuing their career longer than maybe than they do, maybe longer than they could?
Yeah, listen, again, I think every case is different. You know, I've played with players that would love to, but they can't because of injury. You know, some lose the drive and the determination, which you really, really need, particularly the lower you come down and you're coming away from, I suppose, the glitz and glamour of playing at higher levels. But there's also some real basics and fundamentals that come with playing, for example, in the Championship, where I played most of my career, you know, prior to coming to Orient. You know, and it is a test sometimes coming down. You know, little things like maybe lads not travelling, you know, the night before a game that they would always travel for, so the preparation, you know, just the day-to-day things around football in the lower leagues is different. And I can understand sometimes, you know, where players get maybe a little bit disillusioned, you know, with not having it how they're used to having it. And again, I've got loads of friends who have probably suffered from that fate. But at some point, you just have to ask yourself why you're doing it, you know, whether you really want to still do it, and whether you can do it. And again, that might be physically, that might be mentally, you know. And I think, again, from my point of view, while I can and I've still got that desire, you know, I'm sure I'll know when the time is to stop. But that's not quite at the moment, so I'll try and make the most of whatever time I've got left.
Because your career spans enormous change in the game, and not least in terms of wages. Has that had a factor in terms of players' decisions maybe to finish a little earlier?
I think, again, it probably comes down to adjusting a lifestyle. You know, again, I've been around lads that have obviously earned, you know, incredible sums of money. And again, just off the bat, you know, earning those figures to come down and play in, again, the National League, for example, or D2, or, you know, it is night and day, you know, when you talk about, you know, career earnings. And some lads just can't get their head around it, you know, that you're now playing football. And I think this is where, you know, for me, again, it comes down to the question of why you're actually doing what you do. And there are lads that probably do get to a point where they enjoy football, but there are pressures, there are demands that come off being a footballer, and sometimes they can be too much for players, particularly when maybe the earnings drop and they're now not earning what they might have done before. You know, they might ask themselves, is it really worth me carrying on at this level? But, you know, again, whether I was earning 100 grand a week or £100 a week, I'd be playing football somewhere, Dave. So, you know, from my point of view, that's, again, something that you get to a point where you have to ask yourself if you really want to carry on doing it and you're still enjoying it. And the answer has always been yes for me. So, again, you know, while that remains the case, I'll, you know, keep going.
Because I'd imagine when you started back in 2001, it was the Division 1 then. It would have been the Championship these days. The Premier League was relatively new. And the fourth division feels very different to League 2. Do you think that's right?
Yeah, I would say so. I think the money has played a really big part in, for me, the strength in depth of the leagues in this country. Because it has filtered down, whether it be, you know, as we've seen the Premier League money go through the roof and what players can earn in that league. You've also seen, you know, transfer fees get inflated, you know, to really crazy levels now. And I'm talking, I mean, you look at Ivan Toney, he's just gone now from Peterborough, and you're talking about potentially upwards of £10 million for a League One player, which is incredible, you know. And I'm not doubting him as a player, but that just would never have happened. You know, a good Championship player in my time, you're probably talking £2 million for that max. You know, if you're going to get a Championship player move from the Championship to a Premier League, you might be talking 4 or 5 million. And again, all this, it all filters down to the club. It gives the leagues, you know, a chance to maybe go out, and now you're seeing Championship wages that are really comparable to Premier League wages, you know, 4, 5, 6 years ago. And again, that then trickles down a little bit. So, you know, I think it gives an opportunity for players potentially to earn a little bit more without playing at the highest possible level. And that certainly, again, you know, is a big incentive for players to keep going if they have not quite playing at the level they want. But at least, you know, financially they can still go and earn, you know, an okay wage and, you know, and carry on playing, you know. So, listen, it is a factor no matter what anybody says. And I think, again, for me, that is what makes the leagues as strong as they are. They're so competitive, you know, League 2, League 1. You know, the Championship, they're really, really tough leagues. And a lot of the time it's because they're all very, very even and evenly contested. So, again, I think we have something completely unique in our country. I don't think you go anywhere else. I mean, we were a big example of that in the conference. You know, getting 5,000, 6,000 fans turning up at a game.
I know.
This year. You know, I don't know how many other leagues you could go to in the world or any countries where you would get that. You know, it wasn't just us. You know, you had Wrexham, you had, you know, Tranmere when they were down, you know. So again, that strength and depth is something we should, you know, really try and keep hold of. And, you know, I'm hoping that the league, you know, the EFL in particular, is robust enough to get through these difficult times.
Absolutely, because I think there were just 6,500 at Sellers Park when you made your debut all those years ago. But let's bring up to date and going back to League Two. Coming back to the division after the time in the National League, it feels to me that the tactics have changed. I know that last season a lot of supporters were frustrated that, you know, they were asking for the old-fashioned 4-4-2. But there weren't many clubs in League 2 that were playing the old 4-4-2. It's a lot more complex now in football's 4-2, isn't it, Joby?
Oh, most definitely, Dave. And I think, again, for me, last year, spending the majority of time on the coaching side was a real good learning curve for me, because, again, having been away from it for a little bit, and probably in the conference it was a little bit more 4-4-2, you know, the old school kind of mentality. But even in the conference there were teams that were doing different things, and again, kind of back into League Two, I could probably name you maybe two teams. I remember Cambridge were a 4-4-2 we played against them. And again, this is going into you start doing your analysis, you know, your scouting of the opposition. And it was very, very rare for a team to play 4-4-2 in League Two last year. And for me, that is, you know, a little bit of the way the game is going, it is evolving. And that's not to say you can never play 4-4-2. You know, I am an advocate of playing different formations, maybe to suit different personnel or potentially against who you're playing against. But, you know, for me, yeah, the game has come on. It has come on. And you only have to look at some of the top teams in the world. You know, it's very rare to see a team playing 4-4-2 and being successful. And a large part of that is, again, if you want to be a passing team, which we do, you know, you have to be able to control certainly the midfield area. And if you're playing 4-4-2 against predominantly three other midfielders, it's just simple maths. You know, you're going to get outnumbered. It's harder to keep the ball. You know, you've got less time. You're going to get pressed more. You're going to get outnumbered. Therefore, that leads to a lack of possession and time for possession, which then the simplistic way to look at it is it's harder to go and score goals. You know, it's harder to not concede if you're not having as much possession as the opposition. And again, probably in the National League, we could get away with that a little bit more because, you know, the quality isn't as great. As you go up through the leagues, the quality gets higher, you know, and obviously the Premier League, the top notch, there'd be times where we'd be fine, you know, we'd be in a game that we thought we were comfortable in and all of a sudden someone sticks one in from 30 yards or, you know, one chance they stick a goal away. And, you know, for us, it's certainly a step up from the National League, there's no doubt about that. You know, we were very much the big fish, you know, in that league where we come up last year, and point blank, teams don't show us as much respect. You know, we've got to go and develop our way of playing, you know, and make sure that is as competitive as it can be, because teams are coming to us, as we saw last year, you know, coming to win games. So we've got to find a way to be better than those teams. And for me, that is certainly a factor to moving forward, is the evolution and, you know, the different way of playing.
Well, the season starts at Forest Green. That really is a project club, isn't it? With one owner's vision and deep pockets, and he's signed some interesting players. And then, of course, the Football League season starts at Oldham Athletic. Harry Kuehl, who would have thought that Harry would have taken over at a club that seems from a distance to have all sorts of difficulties off the field, that really appreciate the stability at the O's?
Oh, for sure. You know, this whole sort of episode and everything with, you know, the virus has really reinforced, and we knew, don't get me wrong, you know, I've been at the club with complete opposite in terms of ownership, as you know, well know, Dave, and I'm sure the fans will share that experience as well. So those of us who've been through that, we greatly appreciate, you know, the openness, the transparency, you know, and just the general goodwill and good nature of the owners that we've got, and how much they want to do for Leyton Orient Football Club. For some of the lads maybe that haven't been through that before, you know, and they're speaking to other lads at other clubs now that haven't had the communication, you know, they're getting a letter saying they've been released, or they're getting a letter saying maybe they've got to take a pay cut. There's no direct communication there, whereas here it's completely different. You know, again, Kent and Nigel will always make themselves available. Yeah, of course, a lot's been online via Zoom, but it's still a personal conversation that takes place. So, you know, from that point of view, again, we're very, very fortunate. There's a lot of other clubs that are going to be in a lot worse position than us coming out of this. You know, I genuinely believe that. And some is down to not being run very well, and some are just probably just been caught out by a situation that nobody could ever foresee. So, you know, I think from that point of view, all the work that everyone does behind the scenes and making sure the club's well run, again, making sure there's a plan in place for where we want the club to go, they're all things now that are coming into play to hopefully, I'll say hopefully, put us in a good position to move forward, and, you know, maybe be able to take advantage of some of the other teams not in such a great position, and, you know, catch them on the hop a little bit for the start of the season.
Because, Joby, you must have seen Leyton Orient at its very worst as well as at its best. How difficult, Joby, was it to make that decision to come back to Brisbane Road and East End?
I've got to be honest, Dave, it wasn't a massively hard decision as soon as I knew the previous regime had gone. because, again, listen, I've got enough friends here. You know, I know Kevin Lindsay well. I know David Mooney well. You know, people that I spoke to before I came to the football club, you know, that spoke so highly of everything to do with Leyton Orient. And to get in and almost see the complete opposite was a real shock. And there were some really difficult times, of course, during those 2 years, you know, on and off the pitch. But ultimately what it came down to, again, was, you know, people that didn't have respect, first and foremost, for anyone else. I could see the disillusionment, you know, amongst the fans because of everything that had gone on. And once I'd spoken to Martin Ling, you know, and he was very clear that it was a new regime. You know, I had a really good chat with Kent, who, again, these guys were completely different to what I'd experienced previously. I've been on record as saying it before. You know, for me, that time didn't sit well with me personally as a footballer because I didn't feel that Orient, you know, and certainly the fans had seen anywhere near the best of me. And I didn't want to leave it like that. You know, the opportunity came about and I just felt, especially having contributed to getting relegated in the first year and not been able to really put that right, you know, particularly till later on in the season, you know, I just felt like there was enough there for me to come back and try and be a part of that team that got back out of the National League into the Football League. And, you know, I'm really pleased to have been able to be a small part of that. You know, it's a fantastic time for the club. It's a tough task. Again, you only have to ask a Wrexham or, you know, some of the other teams that have been down there for a long time. And I really feel that getting out was the real hardest first step. And now it's just a matter of, you know, keeping on building. You know, we've got to be patient, you know, but we have an ambition, we have a desire to really move the club forward. And, you know, getting out of the National League was the biggest challenge in that. Now we're kind of back at least to League Two level. We feel, you know, we can really help push the club on, and that was the real driving force behind me coming back. And, you know, I'm really, really pleased that, you know, I've been able to, as I say, play a small part in that.
Well, you know, for me, I think it was Leyton Orient's most important and significant promotion. But I have to disagree with you, Joby. You are a very humble man. You didn't play a small part in it. I think you played a major part in what really was a team effort. I think Kent summed it up very well. We might not have had the best players, but we had the best team, and it was a remarkable season. It was a fantastic season. But Joby, your leadership on the pitch was absolutely crucial to that, and it was sorely missed last season. And I'm just hoping that we'll see you lots in the forthcoming campaign.
Yeah, well, that's the plan, Dave. Again, I didn't want to finish on, you know, if I could help it, again, at my age and with the lack of football last year, it wasn't going to be just my decision. You know, clearly the club had to make a decision and take a view on, you know, where I was at, basically, and whether they felt I could contribute. You know, I'd like to think that, again, even though I only came on for one game, I'd been fit and training for a little while, and felt I'd showed enough in that period to warrant going again. And of course, I'm desperate to get on the pitch and just be around the lads a little bit more. Again, when you're injured and having operations, there's time away from the training grounds. You know, you're not in amongst it where you want to be, whether that's, again, trying to dictate, you know, the standards maybe and the environment in terms of that dressing room. And I missed it, you know, I missed being in there, and it's been really good, you know, coming back for pre-season, you know, again, with an eye on the other bits, but very much as a player and being around the boys. And you know, we've had some really positive chats amongst ourselves about what we want to do and how we want to go about it this year. And, you know, as again, you know, we're lucky we've got other players there. It shouldn't just be on one player. I'm not, you know, one to say, you know, the sort of superhero captain, one guy, you know, leading 20 other guys. Of course, there are times where you have to stand up as a captain and lead. But for me, the best team that I've ever been in, and certainly what was a real hallmark of that group that had success, was there was, you know, 5, 6, 7 lads in there that, you know, would all take it upon themselves at certain times to drive that group. And, you know, I really feel we've got that within us. sometimes it may be a matter of some of those lads realising they're those guys now, and it is their time to stand up at times and, you know, and be counted. And I think, again, from the conversations we've had, we've got enough of those amongst this group to really help us to move forward. And again, I'm just pleased to be a part of it, and, you know, I'll obviously do what I can in terms of leading that side of things, but, you know, it's certainly not a one-man job. It never has been, and, you know, I don't think it ever will be. And as long as we have those guys with us and with me, then we're in a good place.
Absolutely, Joby, and I really do appreciate your time for joining us today. I just want to take this opportunity to thank you, Joby, for all you've achieved at Lake Nui in both spells. You know, as you say, you've seen us at our worst and at our best, and it was a wonderful campaign that saw the O's, of course, get back into the Football League under the inspiration of Justin Edinburgh. And, you know, it's always great to see you on Sky wearing the Justin Edinburgh Free Foundation badge with pride. We're looking forward to seeing you in action next season. And I really do hope that very soon the Orient faithful will be able to go pack the Braegroup Stadium in order to see you and to cheer on the lads.
Nice one, Dave. I can't wait. As I say, that even coming on for that sort of 25 minutes was, you know, a real amazing day for me and certainly my family as well. And again, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of fans at home very frustrated at the moment, chomping at the bit to get into the ground. But hopefully, if things carry on in a positive way as they have been recently, you know, we might not be too far off having that day where everyone can come back in and really enjoy being at home. So again, you know, we thank them for all the support. You know, they've ensured that, again, you know, this club's in a reasonably strong position to move forward. And again, I think something that comes from the ownership, whether it be those guys at the top, you know, us as players, you know, anyone else working at the football club and the fans, you know, we are really sort of one club moving together. And I think it's as long as we keep that ethos, then, you know, we'll be in a really, really good place to make ourselves stronger and move forward.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Joby, and good luck.
Pleasure, Dave. Thank you.
Well, that was Dave Victor with Joby McEnough. Our thanks to Luke Lambourne for arranging the interview, and thanks to Dave and Joby for doing it. Now, obviously, there are some sound quality issues with some of the interviews and things we are doing. I hope you appreciate, due to COVID, we've got limitations in place in the studio. We are only allowed to have three people in the studio, and obviously quite rightly, as you, I'm sure you'd agree, the club are quite guarded at the moment. They don't want players coming out to studios where not necessary, so that's quite acceptable. So where possible at the moment, we're conducting things over the telephone, and in Dave's case, obviously the whole thing was done by telephone, so I hope the sound quality didn't upset your enjoyment of the interview too much, but I'm sure your understanding of the situation and the limitations we're operating under at this current time. Now then, we mentioned the fact that Jordan Thomas, if you just joined us, 19-year-old, has joined from Norwich on a year-long loan at right back. Now, the match against Bishop Stortford, Darren, you were there. What did you think about various positions? Because people were questioning the right back as one of the positions that people were feeling we needed to improve on.
Yeah, I think most of us are probably questioning the centre half more than the right back, Andy, aren't we? But I felt that the lad playing there did okay. Everyone did okay, in fairness, against Stortford. There was one lad who really caught my eye. Was I think it's Matt Young, the youth player. I thought he had a very good game. I thought he was very assured on the ball. Looked like he really knew what he was doing. Didn't look out of place against when he was playing with some of the more senior ones that were on. I think it's fair to say that in the second half, particularly, it was mainly youth players. But going back to your question, Andy, about right back, I can't stand it, but it does beg the question that we've now got three currently in the building. So maybe one possibly moving on at some point.
You would have thought so, yeah. I mean, I think Ross made a decision on Monday to give the youngsters, as you say, the second half there and give them a run out. But that was encouraging for them, isn't it? It's good for them to see light at the end of the tunnel there, and that there is a chance.
I thought that what was encouraging as well was looking at the Bishop Stortford players, and I've been to non-league grounds over the years, and I like non-league football. I didn't enjoy it that much the first season we were in it, but that aside, you know, and I've always gone, and I lived in Stortford for a while, so I used to go and watch them, I've watched Waltham Abbey. Anyway, what really impressed me with Stortford was the fitness levels. You know, it's not like it was years ago where you'd expect the sort of centre-half to be a bit rotund, shall I say. These days, these lads take the game very seriously, don't they? And I think they do a lot of work outside of the training that they've got to do with the club. So they were fit lads, the Stortford lads. So it was a good test for our youngsters in that respect, Andy. Good physical test, and they stood up well.
The one thing I would say about that match as well, the coming away from the playing side and the attendance side, is that Dave mentioned on the commentary that fans had torn down the restriction cord that was put around some of the seats, and that stand actually looked pretty full, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't pick that up. I thought Stortford as a club handled the situation very well. We had our temperature tested on the way in, and I got my ticket by email, as everyone did. And I thought, fair play to Stortford. I was very impressed with the way they conducted themselves, shall we say. And we all know we're living in very different circumstances what we're used to, it was nice to see. I think Steve was there, Steve Castle. We saw, I bumped into Steve and said hello to Steve. I think someone said Cole Griffiths was there.
Yeah,
so it was a good turnout. I think Stortford were a bit unlucky not to get a penalty in the second half, if I'm honest. I thought it was one of their lads went down, forgive me, I don't know who it was, but who brought him down, one of our lads. But I think the Stortford fans were slightly unhappy with that one.
Right, and Barry, you've been involved, though. You were at the ground for the West Ham game. Now, what's it like being there with no crowd?
Yeah, it's really odd. Obviously, you're watching a game of football, competitive football, and it feels like a training match. It's the team are out, they're playing. I mean, going to the game itself, did you cover it last week? I'm assuming you did. No, you were live on air when it was taking place.
We were live, we gave out the scores, yeah.
So, you know, I mean, the game itself, I think it's fair to say that Orient put out a... not their best side in the first half, and West Ham for their part were very good. They're some very good players, and that's Dan. Help me out. What's his
Dan
name?
Hap? Dan?
No. Who nearly came to us? We went to Stevens. Beg your pardon. He scored the second goal anyway. The right sided player. He looked very good. In the second half, when we put out our more regular 11, we won that second half 1-0, and we hit the woodwork twice as well. And there was nice football being played. So I think. You play all sorts of different teams pre-season, don't you? It was a good workout. But yeah, it was strange to be... I mean, I was just re-familiarising myself with the club. I've been there for 6 months, like most people. Just re-familiarise myself via Luke and Danny, and just ironing out a few things and what we're going to do when the season starts. As far as I'm aware, obviously, if there's streaming happening, it'll be business as usual. So, you know, Taxi will be played, and the teams will come out as usual.
And you're going to announce them?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. It'll be business as usual regards the match day experience. Obviously, the crowd are watching live, via the screen rather than being in the stadium. But the procedure, as I understand it, will be the same. So yeah, but it was a strange atmosphere. I mean, everybody's watched it on the telly with the Premier League, and it's just odd, isn't it? It shows you that intangible thing about an atmosphere. You know, even when you're in a pub, a crowded pub, you're not listening to the people in the background, are you? But the atmosphere is present, isn't it? And it's the same with any sport, any crowd. That crowd noise, you're not really listening to it, but it's important for that intangible thing of atmosphere, isn't it?
I think on Monday the atmosphere, guys, was typical pre-season, typical friendly. There wasn't any singing, chanting, and I was there, so that's unusual. But it was what it was. It was a friendly game, but it was just nice to be in a crowd. It was nice to see familiar faces. It was nice to get to watch football again live after 6 months. So I, for one, was very grateful for the opportunity.
Right, let's just go through a couple of the questions from the message board if we can. Dove B, do we have enough goals in our strikers?
Well, I was actually, one thing I didn't say about the West Ham game is our strikers look quite sharp. Connor and Lee Engel in particular, who was man of the match for me when we were playing against the West Ham under 23s, looked really at it. And Connor played well. And yes, I think that we, yeah, I think we do.
I'd agree with that.
We scored several goals against Spurs as our under 23, didn't we?
yeah, that's right. Yeah,
we did. I think Johnson got another one, didn't he, against Gillingham?
Yeah.
He's had a couple and goals, been scoring plenty.
And Rule will score goals as well.
I think, in fairness to the strikers, Andy, I think it's about service, isn't it? If you don't give them the service, they can't score the goals. And I think the goals are in those players.
Yeah, I mean, right, disoriented.
Well, disorients you.
Yes, it's disoriented yeah. me, and I'll put just my false tooth back in here. It's a bit of an outdated question now. He felt that, was Sam Lynn getting favourable treatment? Well, I think that's been thrown out
obviously
of the window,
not.
Hasn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the fact is we've got three right-backs now, and I think in a way what Ross has done is he's got them all on their toes and battling for that place. I mean, if you feel that you're going to walk into a place and either Judd or him walks in, it's there's no real competition there. If you've got that third person now, they've really all vying for one spot.
Yeah, I don't think there's been a number one right back for some time now. I mean, say it was Sam's place for a while, it was Moleshard's place for a while, but it's not really it doesn't really pick itself that position, in my opinion.
I'll go back to what I said earlier, really. I think it's the centre back that, you know, we need to get in the building.
I think centre back wise we've got some good players, but obviously pace is maybe a concern.
We were talking off air, and Andy and I about this, and talking about whether Joe Widdowson can play now. I think he can, if I'm honest. Perhaps a bit more new did Andy, is that fair to say?
Yeah.
I think that he's probably played a little bit in the past, and I think at his age he can read the game. He knows the game very well now. He's an experienced pro, and he's got a bit of pace, but I did agree with you, Andy. He's not a right back, he's not a centre back.
Well, this is the problem, isn't it? And if he gets a bit of a pasting and he's lost his place at fullback, you know, it's unfair on him in a way, isn't it?
I think the manager would take that into consideration, Andy. I think Ross would consider that you know, he's asking to play out of position. We played Brophy out of position, didn't we, a lot last season?
Yeah. I think, Darren, you've got to be a bit fair here and say that we all know what's gone on the last few months, and all clubs are going to have to cut their cloth accordingly and have this square peg in round hole situation where you are going to have to plug gaps, Barry, with players who aren't necessarily naturally made for that position.
Well, with the squad cap, so to speak, yeah, that's true. The squad is more important this season, I would suggest, more than previous seasons, because A, there are less players, and B, there's more fixture congestion because of the late start to the season. So you would think that there is going to be a bit more of that going on, where people are asked to play in any position that the manager asked them to, because of the restrictions on the size of the squad and the fixture. Saturday, Tuesday, I think there's 11, didn't Joby sell, they said there's 11 Tuesdays lined up already, and this is without cup competitions and the like. So yeah, it's going to be more of a squad game this season.
It's always been the case in League Two, going back into the day, where, you know, managers look to sign players who could play in a couple of positions. And if that's coming back, then I don't think that's necessarily surprising, given, like, as Ernie said, you know, given the as Barry said, given the salary caps that they're working to now. So I think we're going to see more of that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of the criticism on certain tweets that were coming out, left you sort of open-mouthed in befuddlement, some of them about the club's not spending any money on players, etc. I mean, they've had no income since March. And,
no.
You know, and people seem to be panicking, and they think, well, hang on, you haven't seen the other teams play yet. The reason some of them have signed dozens of players is because they had no players under contract. And we've got, and I think, Barry, in a way, it's to the club's advantage that a healthy majority of the players formed the squad last season, and with one or two little tinkers here and there, you know, if you've got the side mostly right, and sometimes it is only one or two players that can make a massive difference to the side, and I would say we're going to be up in that top third.
Well, so Joby said in his interview, and I agree with him wholeheartedly, is that towards the end of last season we were looking good, you know, not world beaters, but we'd found our rhythm. You know, we were unbeaten at home for quite a while, and there's only that squad that's still together, and we've had one or two re-signings, if you like, OCSA and Rule signed the contracts, keeping the squad together that know each other. And I prefer, unless the squad is not good enough, I always prefer stability over lots of changes, lots of coming in, and no matter how they look good on paper, signings coming in do have to be the right character, be the right person, be the right, you know, fit into the team.
Prestige Worldwide on the message board. How long till we abandon 4-3-3 for 4-4-2, Darren?
I think Ross will. I think he needs two systems. I think all teams need new two systems. And I think he needs to... we've seen that in pre-season, haven't we, where he's been tinkering with it. If he favours 4-4-3, okay, we're old school, 4-4-2 is how we probably line up with schoolboys. But for me, you've got to be able to play both. And I think Ross... He's far more as a young manager, far more switched on in that respect.
Well, Joby touched on it, didn't he, in his interview?
Yes, he did, and as Joby rightly said, if you don't have the midfield balance, you get overrun and you lose the game. So, yeah, I think Ross is capable of changing it to suit the opposition. I know people say, oh, we should play your own game and play at your own strength, but I think, with all due respect, you sometimes have to look at who you're playing against and pick a team, or pick a formation rather, sorry, that's going to suit that game.
I mean, Barry, we were talking before while the interview was going on, and 4-4-2, I mean, we both, I think, favour that naturally, because it's quite an adaptable formation. You can quickly change things around, can't you?
Well, it's the default position, isn't it, 4-4-2? Well, certainly maybe for our generation, 4-4-2 is the traditional formation, but you can, yeah. You can drop a striker back if you're getting overrun in the midfield for 4-5-1. You can push the fullbacks up, etc. So, yes, it is quite adaptable. Diamonds and narrow shapes are maybe not so. You have to restructure the whole team.
I think with the number of subs, you can now changed formation mid-games. I think when you can only make one or two subs, you couldn't really do that. Now you can change a formation mid-game. We perhaps tinkering with it mid-game is not a great idea, but sometimes it needs must.
Okay, last few seconds, so very quickly on this one. Mungo, Sotirio's out of sorts. Woodison hasn't really produced anything of note. Have we out-trained the players out-trained the players too early in this pre-season? Overtrained the players.
I think Joby was saying the opposite, wasn't he, in his interview? Now he's in the thick of the action. He's a player and a coach in some respects, and he said that players were grateful to get back early and have that extra time to get fitness. I don't think, you know, I mean, no, I don't think I've been overtrained. It's been a few weeks.
Yeah, that's it, folks. That's all we've got time for. Do tune in to the live stream on Saturday for the Forest Green Rovers match. And this time next week, we'll have some proper matches to talk about. Have a great week, everybody. Stay safe and enjoy yourselves.
Giddy up and giddy up and get away. Oh, we're going crazy.
This is Phoenix FM News.